As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Check, check, 1, 2. Check, check, 1, 2. Beautiful. This is the first thing of the new year, right? Whatever. I'll just say welcome to a new year with the thing. All right. 3, 2, 1.
How about we can just watch basketball?
How about we can just watch basketball?
Good morning and welcome to the Daily Ding. Happy Monday morning and welcome to a new year with your friends here at the Daily Ding. We have all of your 2021 NBA action right here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am your host, Jared Weiss, and I'm joined by Mo DeKeel. What's going on, Mo?
Doing well. I've had a belly full of Chinese food and I'm ready to go.
No, it's the 4th. Are you recovered from New Year's yet?
Yeah, I didn't leave the house. What are we talking about here?
That's true. All right, well, we got Jade Hoy behind the scenes making sure all the technology is still working. And before we jump into the show, do not miss exclusive in-depth coverage of this unprecedented sports season. It's still unprecedented. It's still going. And you can subscribe now and save by going to theathletic.com/dailydig, where you can receive an all-access subscription and get one to give for free. Still late holidays. I forgot to give you a gift for the holidays time. So why not give that gift with The Athletic at theathletic.com/dailyding. So coming up on today's show, we've got game winners on game winners. We got Steph putting up a 60 piece and a clash of contenders in Phoenix. But before that, we're heading to Brooklyn where the Wizards beat the Nets 123-122. Bradley Beal flying to the rim. God damn it. The Wizards beat the Nets in Brooklyn 123-122. Bradley Beal drives and dishes to Thomas Bryant for the game winner. Now, the Nets, they had a shot to win this year. Kyrie gets a good look at it. It rims out on a three. Rebound goes back to KD. KD gets to like 8 feet away from the rim and puts up a shot that you think would go in 99% of the time. But this was just that 1%, Mo.
Yeah, no, it's very rare that KD is going to miss that shot. Like that was a gimme, you know, and I think, you know, 97 out of 100 that's going in. This just happens to be one of those three times that he's going to miss. But I want to go back to the play when, you know, Bradley Beal found Mark Bryant, because, you know, first he missed a shot. They got an offensive rebound and then Beal went in. They ran a pick and roll. The Nets switched. It led to Beal being able to drive baseline, and then he finds Bryant because his man goes to help and nobody from the Nets drops down to take Bryant. So it turned out to be an easy play for Beal to make that pass and for Bryant to get that dunk. And I think those are the kinds of things, you know, that make me worry about the Nets. You know, their defense is my big concern about this team, Jared.
No, I'm going to assume you meant Thomas Bryant, not Phoenix Suns assistant coach Mark Bryant. But
yeah, I do that all the time. Gosh, I'm so sorry, folks.
This wasn't the first take of the show that we had to tape. So, you know, that was my fault. So I think we're one for one here. But, you know, it's funny. This game, we saw Bryant really dominate at the rim against a team that, for the most part, is big with DeAndre Jordan out there or Jared Allen out there. We saw Bryant. We saw Rui Hachimura finish a lot at the rim. I think a big part of that, especially late, was that the Nets are going with Jeff Green at the five in crunch time, which is not a foreign concept. It was working fairly well for Houston last year. But what did you think of the way that the Nets try to close that out and the price that they had to pay closing out so small?
Yeah, I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to keep the floor spread. But again, you have so many offensive weapons. Like, do you really need to give up something on the defensive end? You know, Jared Allen had a good game. He was double-double, 14 and 11. You know, the thing is, Thomas Bryant had 21 and 14. You know, like, he was just dominant. And you kind of needed a big man out there. And I think ultimately this is something that they will adjust over time. Like, here's the thing, Jared. This is the other thing about this team. New coaching staff, brand new coach, you know, and Steve Nash, and they're still figuring things out as they go. But I'm not a big fan of this team going, hey, let's go five out. Like, I think they do need somebody, have a presence at the rim, have a rim protector, somebody who can get a rebound. Because again, they got the stop they needed to get. They just gave up an offensive rebound at the end.
Not to mention, you know, Kyrie and KD are such great mid-range scorers or such great dribble penetrators. You know, I think they can handle dealing with the spacing that issues that would come with going four out, one in. That I think they could, especially with the kind of verticality presence that they can get by playing the lob game with Allen, I assume Allen preferably, hiding in that dunker spot late in games. It does seem like they could make it work by staying big at the end.
Well, I mean, especially when it's the other team staying big. You know, and I think that was kind of their issue there overall. And then just, you know, when you look at the numbers, we were talking about it before we started recording, right? Like, they outshot the Wizards, you know. Oh, excuse me. I got myself mixed up there.
The Wizards
outshot them because they were able to get a bunch of offensive rebounds, 13 offensive rebounds. That's plus six on the Nets in that sense, you know. And then at the same time, they only had seven turnovers, whereas the Nets had 20. You're not going to win games like that.
I mean, Russell Westbrook, he did go 7 for 25 in this game, but he only had two turnovers in 38 minutes. And even if he went 1 for 7 from deep, that does kind of feel like a win when you have Russell Westbrook with a 10-2 turnover, or I guess a 5-1 turnover to assist ratio.
Yeah, no, that's a win, you know, and I think that goes a long way for this team. I just think listen, everybody got too excited when the Nets won their first two games against a pretty crappy Golden State Warriors team. Sorry, Warriors fans. And a Boston Celtics team that's pretty depleted in terms of injury. And we don't know, you know, they're going to be a different team by the end of the season. So I think, you know, everybody was ready to crown them as this team. But I think we're beginning to see their problems, especially this whole week. You know, they've gave up 140 to the Hawks. They won that game because they scored 145, but then they lose, you know, over the weekend when they only scored 96 and give up 116.
Yeah, I mean, I was at that Boston game. I saw the Nets play twice so far this year, and they were just, I mean, hey, it is part of my job. So, you know, I was one of those people that was jumping the gun because I was just talking about what I was seeing in person, which was they looked like juggernauts. They weren't really missing their shots. They were cleaning up whenever they were messing up on both ends of the floor, and their athleticism and their skill just seemed completely overwhelming. But, you know, then when the shots aren't falling and the offense is a little bit disjointed, and I mean, we all know that the, you know, Kyrie Irving can give you great and he can give you messy. I mean, in this game, he went 10 for 20 and he also had 10 dimes, although he did have 5 assists, but he looked pretty great in this game. And I thought KD, he wasn't overwhelming, but he was very, very like good mechanical, and mechanical is the wrong word, but like, you know, very robotic in his ruthless effectiveness, I guess, Kevin Durant in this game, getting to the line 12 times. I mean, this was, I guess, from the guys that you're expecting to be the leaders and key guys for this team, this was the kind of game you were looking for, just that things around the edges were pretty rough.
Yeah, I mean, Caris LeVert can't go 3 for 13, especially with the Spencer Dinwiddie out indefinitely. Like, you can't have that. Like, those are the issues there for this team that's going to, they won't survive those things. You know, when he goes in, because he goes in and he's supposed to man the second unit by himself. Him going 3 for 13 means you're not getting much from that second unit.
Right, let's move on to the Clippers and the Suns.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's take it down to Phoenix, where the Clippers came into town and they won 112 to 107. This game was a blowout for a while, but then Phoenix made a pretty furious comeback in the early fourth quarter, late third quarter to make it pretty close. Paul George, 15 for 24 for 39 points. Luke Kennard, he had 14 off of the bench. Kawhi Leonard, he had only 15. He shot 4 for 21. Not very pretty. On the other side, though, Phoenix had DeAndre Ayton, 9 for 12 from the field for 24 points. Devin Booker had a really strong game with 25 and 8, and then Dario Saric coming off the bench for 15 points of his own. He had some nice play in crunch time. So let's just start, I guess, with LA running away with it pretty early. Paul George just looking very clinical, very composed, hitting his pull-up jumper, being able to get to wherever he wants. I mean, this was really optimal Paul George at work here.
Yeah, this was, you guys have nobody who can guard me and I'm going to do whatever the hell I want, Paul George, you know, and when you look at it in terms of Phoenix, I mean, you know, that's a tough cover for Mikal Bridges, you know, or Crowder, you know, that's not an easy cover for those guys. And when you have Kawhi on the court with them, it's just so difficult for them to figure out who to guard who. And listen, man, there's not much we could say about Paul George. He got it going. I mean, 39 points, 7 to 10 from 3. I mean, he fouled out of this game and it didn't even matter. Like, he was just on fire from the get-go. And every time when the Suns were able to make a run out of this and make it a close game, every time the Clippers needed a bucket, he delivered. And that's the Paul George they're going to need. I mean, pretty much they're going to need the whole way through.
Yeah, I mean, he really was that kind of backstop for them, because they definitely got their backs up against the wall at certain points here, because Booker was just really strong in the second half.
But, I mean, they nearly blew a 31-point yeah. lead, you know.
But you know what? Paul George, he gets into those nights where he's shooting off balance, you know, wing threes, all these shots he's just like putting up where you're just like, what the hell are you doing, Paul? And he just has that hot streak going. And, you know, if people don't think the hot hand exists, just go watch Paul George on one of those nights where he's on. And hey, if you don't think the cold hand exists, go watch Paul George on one of those nights where he's off. But, you know, 7 for 10.
My Nerder She Wrote partner, Seth Partnow, is ready to come after you now.
Yeah, I figured he would. And I would never dare try to debate Seth Partnow in anything, because I don't have the tenacity nor the intellectual capacity to pull it off. But, you know, going, I guess, to the actual comeback portion of this, what I really enjoyed watching in this game was Devin Booker operating out of the high post as a playmaker. We saw him just kind of leading with his butt, very much Chris Paul style. He really is learning from the best there, where he was just kind of like backing guys down, even over the top of the arc, moving butt first, and then just whipping passes once somebody would open up in the corner. And it's really interesting to see the way that Booker's playmaking is evolving even more now that he's playing next to Chris Paul.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of the evolution, right? Like, he's got Chris Paul has proven now, this being his second stop, where he's kind of been a mentor role. And this is a great role for him, and his influence, you know, really kind of gets on these guys, and we're seeing it in Book, and he's developed. I mean, let's start with this. He was a hell of a player to begin with, right?
He's pretty good.
This isn't a shocker, right? And so now he's coming in, and now he has CP kind of helping point out a few other things, and he's going to start operating out of the high post. I mean, he's going to be able to operate anywhere on the court. Like, we're, you know, probably a year or two away from just saying this kid's damn near impossible to guard on that end.
No, he's turning into a potential MVP candidate at some point in the future, if not, depending on how good this team does this year. Maybe this year, we'll see. You know, campaign was not bad in this game. There were moments where a guy would make a nice play. I'm like, wait, campaign? Cam Johnson, same thing. This was a good night for Cams in this game. But every time that the Suns would creep right back in, there is Paul George hit, you know, a mid-post fadeaway jumper. There was a play where I think with about a little less than 5 minutes left, he just takes DeAndre Ayton ISO, crosses him up a couple times, and then just explodes to the rim. It seemed like the go-to at the end there for the Clippers to take this one over was just getting Ayton out on an island, where I thought he does a pretty decent job, but PG could just get to his step back or get to the rim on Ayton every single time.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as good as Ayton has been, he's still a young kid trying to learn how to really defend on the perimeter. And Paul George is going to eat him up every time because Paul George is that good. He was that good in this game. But the other thing, too, and this was the problem for the Suns, going 10 of 33 from three while the Clippers went 17 of 29. Even if you take Paul George's 7 out of 10 out of there, you know, they went 10 of 19 as a team. Like, you know, it's that's the things they got to figure out, how they're going to defend on the 3-point line. How are they going to make sure that they don't give up open looks and allow that to kind of happen? Because that's what happened. The Clippers got hot in the beginning and were just able to hold on enough and keep the Suns off.
Yeah. And I mean, we saw Ayton, to his credit, was really fighting on the glass, fighting on the interior. He was keeping Phoenix in it to the end. But then one fatal mistake was Paul George. He gets trapped up high, up by like half court by Ayton. And George is able to just race his way out of it, drives a lane, and then kicks it out to Nick Batum, of all people, in the corner, who buries a three to give them that, you know, that little cushion that they needed at the end there to secure the win. So I got to say, hell of a game. That was the kind of game that we kind of, I think, come to expect to in 2021, where we're going to see a massive blowout and then a massive comeback and still get a thrilling finish. So that really lived up to the billing. Hall of Famer Paul Westphal passed away at the age of 70. Paul Westphal was inducted into the Hall of Fame last year after winning a championship with the Celtics in 74. Then after getting traded to Phoenix, leading the Phoenix Suns to the finals in 1976, where the greatest game ever played happened. That was game 5 of the 76 finals, where they managed to go to triple overtime, but the Celtics ended up prevailing and winning the title that year. But then Westphal became the coach of the Suns and led the Charles Barkley led team to the finals in 93, where they, of course, lost to the Bulls. So he never won a championship in Phoenix, but was still really a legend in the Phoenix area, known as Westy there. So he'll be sorely missed. And I can attest to him being really one of the nicest guys in the NBA.
Curtis Perry and Jimmy Yard has Gar Hurd right now. It's Tommy Heinsohn's defense. Westphal, turn around, win air, 122-120. Would you believe it? I don't believe the shots that
have you can read more about Westphal's legacy over on The Athletic.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
As far as players currently being out, Luka Doncic, he missed the Mavs' loss to the Bulls on Sunday with a quad contusion, but he's just listed as day-to-day. We had a lot of COVID news. Tomas Satoransky is now testing positive for COVID, and he'll be out for, I guess, an indefinite period of time after Chandler Hutchison, his teammate, also tested positive earlier this week. Miami's Avery Bradley, he missed practice due to COVID protocols, and a large swath of the Clippers' traveling party, not including Mo, who's no longer part of the traveling party and thankfully is not in contact with anybody testing positive, they were all sent home for quarantine reasons. The team still played in spite of this, as we just discussed. So that was a little bit of an interesting decision there. Other injuries, Hawks wing Danilo Gallinari, he'll be out for 2 weeks after he sprained his right ankle. And let's leave on a fun one. Marvin Bagley's dad, he tweeted out that he wants his son out of Sacramento. This ain't the first time that this has happened. He did go after Coach Dave Yeager when Yeager was there. Now he's upset with Luke Walton's using Bagley, even though they're letting Marvin Bagley post up all the time, which is probably stupid. So I don't really know what he has to complain about. But yeah, that tweet got deleted, as you can imagine.
You should have mentioned the did you mention the Holmes mom responded?
Who? What happened?
Dr. Rashawn Holmes' mom. I love the Kings, but they cannot go back to playing the old way. It does not work. Taya was definitely missed tonight.
I totally missed that. Wow.
No, I just saw it. I just saw it now as you were talking. Wow. I saw the two tweets.
All right. You know what? Jay just edited in Mo reading that, and we can work with that or just don't. Whatever.
It's really barely a story.
Yeah. Let's head over to Detroit, where the Celtics beat the Pistons 122-120. This time, Jason Tatum did hit the game winner, blew by Blake Griffin, hit a pull-up jumper, and secured the win for the Celtics. This was the second half of a little home-home miniseries there, where they played two games in 3 days in Detroit. Detroit narrowly won the first game after the Celtics missed some wide-open shots. This time, the Celtics actually converted on the shots at the end of the game. Let's start with Jaylen Brown, though, who went 13-for-16. 31 points for him, 5-for-8 from downtown, although he did have 6 turnovers, but he continues to be on a scoring tear and I believe is still leading the NBA in total points scored at this point, although Bradley Beal might have passed him with his 27 points. But either way, Jaylen Brown's scoring has been pretty phenomenal so far this year.
Oh, he's on a hell of a tear, man. The guy's on fire to start the season. 42 against Memphis. Now he drops 31 tonight. 13 of 16. He missed 3 shots tonight, folks. And didn't, it's not like he took 6 shots. He took 16 of them. You know, 5 of 8 from 3. Like, he's been on a roll to start the season. I don't know if you can get much hotter than him from the field. If I mean, hell, I have no idea who's. I've painted myself into a corner, folks. I have nowhere to go.
Yeah, let me pull you out of there, because I did. I covered the Celtics, so I was covering this game. And Brown, he went 8-for-8 from inside the arc. The only perimeter players in the 3-point era on the Celtics who have hit more 2-pointers without a miss were Ray Allen and then Gordon Hayward, who had the record for the 3-point era with 16-for-16 against Cleveland a couple of years ago. But so Jaylen is stepping in some pretty strong territory with how efficient his pull-up game and his ability to attack the basket has been. And what's been really interesting is that Brown, he's shooting like, I think he's 59% from the field right now. And most, like 45 to 50% of his shots are coming as pull-up from mid-range or pull-ups or catch-and-shoots from the three-point line. So the guy's just shooting out of his mind right now, mostly on contested field goals. He's just hitting everything, no matter how well contested he is.
Yeah, I mean, he's on a roll. And then the other side of the story that you got to talk about is Jason Tatum's passing.
Oh, yeah.
12 assists today, no turnovers. Like, he was diming it out. You know, he was coming on, and it wasn't just, like, making the easy pass. It was looking off defenders and passing guys into open spaces so that they can get their shots off. He was on a roll in that sense. And that's something they so desperately need without Kemba Walker right now. And it sounds like he's not going to be back anytime soon. So, you know, they're going to need more of that from him and really the team as a whole. Because, I mean, their playmaking is going to be a problem, but it's great to see Tatum kind of rise to the occasion a little bit as a playmaker.
No, that's been the story of the year for this team so far, because they're starting with double bigs, although Thompson and Tice, they went 12 for 20 in this game, so they were actually pretty good in this one. But they've been starting with double bigs, neither of whom are really shooters. Daniel Tice, he did at least go 1 for 2 from deep in this game, but these are guys that don't really play with they don't put the ball on the ground, they don't spot up shoot that well, and it's been really cramping their offense at the beginning of halves, and they tend to have a major blunder, whether it's out the gate or out of halftime. They tend to have one, like they give up one huge run because their offense falls apart. But having Tatum and Brown playmaking the way that they're playmaking, I mean, both of them have been kind of taking turns as who's the guy diming everybody up each night. And then in this game, Marcus Smart, he had 17 points and 10 dimes. He had a pretty great game on both ends, actually.
They're in a good spot right now. They lost a tough one against Detroit in the first leg of this mini series, but they're in a good spot right now. I kind of like how they're going. I don't know how you feel about this though, Jared. I'm very worried about Jeff Teague spraining his ankle because they just don't have any more guys left.
Well, it's funny because everybody loves Peyton Pritchard, who's been, you know, the rookie out of Oregon that we were all surprised when they took him at 26, because there were a few other point guards I liked better at that spot on my draft board. But aside from Theo Maledon, who's been very good for Oklahoma so far, I mean, Pritchard's been proven to be really good and probably even better than Teague, dare I say, so far. Teague is such a crafty scorer, and he has been aggressive trying to get some steals, but Pritchard's been the better two-way player so far. So I think they could probably weather that storm, especially because they do have a couple other backup point guards in Carson Edwards and Tremont Waters, who, you know, they're not really ready to play in the NBA necessarily yet, but they at least like are bodies that they can use. So they could survive Teague being hurt for, you know, a couple weeks here, which is probably what it's going to end up being, considering how badly he limped off the floor. But obviously, if Teague or really just any other perimeter player on this team gets hurt, they're in serious doo-doo, because they're already short just because they didn't replace Gordon Hayward yet, and they still haven't used that trade exception on anyone. And then Kemba Walker's out and Romeo Langford is out. But their lottery pick, Aaron Nesmith, is still collecting DNP CDs, so they're going to have to dust them off at this point.
And there's probably a reason why. Yeah. And so you think they'll be okay. I don't think they have enough guys for that. But we also got to talk about the other team here a little bit that played in this game. Well, I thought the Pistons, you know, they did all right down the stretch. I mean, Blake Griffin missed a couple of wide open threes in the corner that, you know, would have changed the tenor of this game down the stretch. So, you know, they're kind of just right there, but they're struggling a little bit. I'm more annoyed that the Celtics had to go two close games with the Pistons at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this Pistons team on paper and frankly in person, they just don't have much offensive punch. But credit to Jeremy Grant. Jeremy Grant, he took the money, he took the role, and he's living up to it. He had 22 points on 8 for 16 shooting. His deep shooting has been nice. He's attacking the rim with composure, with nice skill moves. He can finish really well. This guy is a complete revolution and revelation from where he was even just like before the bubble last year. I mean, I guess I didn't watch him close enough to like really know if this was something that could have been conceivable, but I've watched him plenty over his career and I just never saw this coming before what we saw him do in the bubble. And I think his skill set is even more refined now when we're seeing him kind of be the main guy or the main wing in this Pistons rotation.
Yeah, I'm not convinced yet. Six games isn't going to sell me on this. He needs to do it for a whole season. I'm not convinced. He might just be on a really good tear, but I'm not convinced right now that he's this guy. You know, I think he's just playing above his level right now.
Okay, well, then what do you think about Killian Hayes, who isn't really scoring the ball, but he's been doing pretty much everything else at a decent level for them as a starting point guard?
He's been struggling, dude. Like, I'm not sure It looks really bad with considering how well Tyrese Halliburton's doing in Sacramento. Here's the thing that screwed up. It's a rookie with no summer league, with no whole summer to develop, no full training camp. So I don't want to kill the kid or anything like that. I still think it's not something to give up on him. I just haven't seen anything yet that makes me go like, wow, this kid's really got something.
Interesting. See, I'd like some of the dribble drives that he's pulling off. His length, obviously, the point guard position's pretty nice on defense. I'm seeing a few flashes that I like out there. And of course, he was one of the rawest prospects coming into this draft, while Halliburton, I think, is a much more polished prospect. I mean, I'm sure I think this was in the tone of your voice. I think we can all agree Tyrese Halliburton falling as far as he did in the draft was just like mind blowing, unless there's some sort of medical red flag that hasn't surfaced somehow yet. But that one was really shocking, and he's been as good as we thought it would be. But I think. While Detroit, I feel like they're not really utilizing all their young talent nearly as well as they should be. Hayes, at least they're handing him the keys even before he has his learner's permit or even really knows how to work the clutch. But I am starting to see some stuff that makes me think he'll be able to run the ship at some point.
You and I will have to disagree there. Yeah, well, agree to disagree. That was the phrase. The Chinese food really messed me up today.
You know what? My Pistons takes might be garbage because I think Sekou Doumbouya should be a center in the future. And I got laughed off the face of the earth by Pistons fans when I said that he should be their center of the future. So, you know, well, who am I to say? But, you know, he went 3-for-3 in this game. Jahlil Okafor went 3-for-3 in this game. And then Svi Mykhailiuk off the bench, he went 5-for-8, 3-for-6 from deep. I thought he was probably their best player in this game besides Grant. Although Mason,
and didn't even play till the second half.
Yeah, I know. This team is just they already had like kind of the outside of the rotation guys, or I guess the back end of the rotation guys, before they made their free agency moves. And then they just piled in more of those guys in free agency. So I don't know what this team is going to be, but what we do know is maybe something will change at some point here as he gets more warmed up. But Blake Griffin looked washed as hell in this game. He is not moving.
Yeah, man.
He is old.
That's it. He's old.
All right. Well, you know what? Steph Curry might not be a spry chicken anymore, but the guy can still stroke it. 62 points. In a win for the Warriors, they beat the Portland Trail Blazers 137-122 in the late game from Sunday. Amazingly, that is not a franchise record because back in 74, Rick Barry scored 64 points against the Trail Blazers. So if you're the Trail Blazers, you don't want to see anything from the Warriors ever for the rest of history. But it was just so much fun watching Steph in this game just absolutely rain and not just be great, but then even at the end of the game, as things were kind of getting a little bit tighter, just continuing to bomb away.
Yeah, I mean, first off, this whole weekend has been everybody trying to relitigate Steph Curry's legacy, you know, as if he's not a two-time back-to-back MVP and three-time NBA champion. You know, everybody's been going off all weekend. So it was really great for him to end the weekend the way he did and just going completely ballistic. Now, here's the sad news for the Warriors fans. He's got to do this so this team can win games. Like, that's the problem with the team. Like, they just don't have a ton of talent. They're just not really, it's not even a ton of talent. They just don't, the guys aren't playing well. Andrew Wiggins has never really been on a team that's won and been the impactful reason why. You know, Draymond Green still coming back and working his way back into shape. I mean, Kelly Oubre still struggling from three, going 1-for-5 in this game and shooting, before this game was shooting about 4% from three. So, you know, it's going to take Steph Curry, maybe not going 62, but dropping like 35, 40 a night for this team to have a chance.
Could you tell me what Kelly Oubre was shooting from three again?
Before this game. So this number hasn't been updated, but I'm sure it hasn't improved that much. 4%.
4%. It's incredible.
I thought it was a typo. I thought the computer was broken when I saw that.
It's amazing. I saw it on Twitter this morning. I'm like, that can't be right. Then I checked. I'm like, holy crap, that's right. Yeah, you know what? But one thing I will say, Kelly Oubre went 7-for-13. Andrew Wiggins went 8-for-16. James Wiseman went 6-for-9. Eric Paschal went 5-for-6. The Warriors shot 55.7%. I mean, that's pretty good. That is pretty good. Steph, the best part about Steph's stat line is that he had 62 points on 18 field goals made and 18 free throws made. That'd be one thing if like James Harden did that, but Steph is not exactly a foul drawing machine. He's not exactly a brute force kind of guy. So to see him go 18 for 19 from the line, that's really thrilling. You know, the only guy that can match that was Enes Kanter. He had 8 field goals made and 8 free throws made. So is Enes Kanter the Steph Curry of the Warriors? Who's to say? But you know, CJ McCollum
of the Blazers.
That's right. Either way, the premise doesn't work. Dame and CJ, they combined for 60. They had solid nights, but that's not going to do it when Steph Curry is dropping 62. So hats off to one of the greats who, thank God, he is still bringing it at that level, because it's been too long since we've seen Steph dominate the league, and I want to see more of it. Ding, ding. All right. Out of here, and that's it. That's going to do it for today's show. Don't forget about the other basketball shows across the Athletic Podcast Network. We still have your favorite shows like the Athletic NBA Show, No Dunks, House of Strauss, and over a dozen team-specific shows available from some of your favorite Athletic beat writers. And don't forget to follow on the app where you can get notifications for new episodes, and you can utilize that podcast episode comment section. So if you want to criticize us for forgetting who plays for what team, if you're Mark Bryant and you want to thank us for the shout-out, leave a comment in the app. And if you're not a member of The Athletic, you're in luck, because you can get all of our podcasts ad-free, plus some fantastic writing from across all major sports, all for a super low price, by going to theathletic.com/dailyding, where you can get yourself a subscription, and you can get a friend, a lover, a scorn lover, a secret lover, whoever you want, another subscription for free included with your sub. Thank you, as always, for waking up with us. Mo, let's get out of here.